Welcome back to Look Ma No Hands. I am here with Sally Maxwell. She is the co-founder of Maxwell Coaching, and she's the co-founder because the other founder is her husband, Zach. They are relationship coaches here in Aspen, Colorado. And you know, the second I met her and found out she was a relationship coach, my next question was, okay, you've got to come on the podcast. We have had relationship coaches, sex coaches, marriage coaches, rabbis talking about marriage, all those things, psychotherapists on this podcast. This is a topic I'm really passionate about because as somebody who podcasts about motherhood, I know how difficult it can be to navigate your marriage when you have a new baby and babies, however many times you do it, specifically the newborn stage. You have two people who are run ragged, sleep deprived in many cases, in a lot of ways, not able to meet their basic needs. So we talk about we should halt when we are frustrated. HALT is an acronym for hungry, angry, lonely, and tired. I think we can be all four of those at once with really no way to solve that problem when we have a newborn baby. And so I talked to Sally at a party recently and I said, you know, I really want to bring you onto the show because you just had a baby yourself and this is your second kid. And as a relationship coach, like what can we tell my listeners around how to navigate this stage and get out of that, of the newborn stage, still in love with your spouse? And maybe not only that, but stronger than you were before, and how to have hope during that stage. Because I think for so many of us, you know, it can bring us to our knees and it's hard to see that like things are not always going to be that way. It can really throw a wrench into the way you believed things were. So Sally, welcome to the show. I am so glad you're here. I'm going to dive in with my first question. How did you get into relationship coaching in the first place? What sparked this career path for you?
Well, thank you so much for that question. And thank you for having me, Laura. My husband and I have been together. Our first kiss was when we were 18. But we've actually been together since we were 23. And when we were in our young 20s, we were so deeply in love, crazy for each other. And both of our families were having a negative impact on our relationship, and we didn't quite know how to navigate that. So my family didn't approve of my choice in him, which was just heart-wrenching for me, because as a little girl who has always been seeking her parents' approval, I didn't know what to do with the information called my parents didn't approve of the guy that I want to spend my life with. And then on Zach's end, his father is mentally not well, which was also negatively impacting our relationship in terms of how do we set boundaries with him and still love him as a father. And so Zach and I were dealing with a lot of challenges from the external world outside of the little microcosm of our relationship, and we needed help with how to navigate that. So we started working with a relationship coach, and very quickly we learned the power of having tools and strategy and framework to navigate through life's tricky moments as a unit.
I'm so glad you just brought this up, because so many people deal with this. And so often the reflex when you are close with your family, because I know you've told me that I think you called your parents like the Camelot of parents, that they were just amazing. Yeah. So many people deal with this when they come into themselves and they meet a partner, and the default can be, well, then I can't be in this relationship, or how, like, there's like a lack of ability to navigate that. And on the other side, there's the toxic parent, which you were just talking about, a parent who's mentally ill, and navigating that can be so difficult because of the messages that we're given from society about how to let our parents into our lives and the boundaries that we should or shouldn't have with that parent. And, you know, we're raised by our parents. We're raised to believe that they have the answers for us. So when they don't approve of such a major life choice, why didn't your parents, if you're willing to share, why didn't your parents approve of Zach in the beginning?
Well, being that my parents were a little Camelot-y.
Yes. Okay. Got it.
They saw him, you know, his parents were divorced, which was something that they didn't understand, right? And something that made them worried that he would then go and divorce me. Right.
Yeah. So wow. Interesting. Uh-huh. Sure.
They didn't understand that. He was also, you know, he had really bad manners. Like, he was a 23-year-old who would like eat with his elbows on the table and double dip in the bar. And like, he was just kind of like a slobby 23-year-old, adorable. Right. but like didn't really present well in Camelot.
Got it. Okay. I know so many people listening can relate to this right now. So you've navigated these two major challenges with your future spouse. And so when do you decide, okay, this is something I want to give to other people?
As soon as I experienced that power of, like I said, of learning tools and strategies and frameworks together, I woke up to the realization that this is actually something that I could do and teach other people. So I began years of training. You know, this was 15 years ago. So I really threw myself into learning more, training more, learning different modalities. And does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does answer my question. You threw yourself into learning different modalities. And now you work with couples. I mean, you work with couples in Aspen, Colorado. So this is a pretty colorful place to work with couples. What are the type of things that you find yourself dealing with the most?
Well, yes, I work with clients in Aspen, Colorado, but I also have a global client base where all of my coaching is done virtually. So I just, for example, got off a coaching call with somebody in London. So there's the global context, and then there's the local context. But I would say locally, the biggest thing about local groups of people is that everybody thinks that their locality makes them unique. So here's what I mean by that. When I coach, like, let's say I'm coaching a single woman in New York. She thinks that it's unique that there are no good guys in New York. And she thinks that this is just unique to New York, right? There are no good guys here. I'm seriously, Sally. I've looked under every rock, every tree. It's New York. New York is the reason why I'm single. In Aspen, it's, well, I'm 50 and I'm divorced and there's nobody in Aspen. That's why I'm single. Or I am in a relationship and my wife travels all the time and the Aspen airport is really tricky to get to, so we don't spend a lot of time together. It's Aspen's fault.
It's Aspen's fault. This is so interesting because I hear this all the time. And I know what my response to it is because I've been there. Like I've been, you know, like when I was single, I remember saying things like that. And somebody said to me, you know, you exist and you are single and you are you. It only takes one person. It only takes one person, Laura. It just takes one person. You might not think that there's anybody in Aspen, for example, if I've been living there, who could be your partner, but you exist and you're single. So what's your response to people when they say this to you?
It's you. You are the common denominator. You know the saying, wherever you go, there you are.
Yep.
You truly are. And I say you as a universal collective you. I'm speaking to everybody. You are the common denominator in the results that you generate in your life. So if you are single, it's not Aspen's fault. It's not New York's fault. If you're in an unhappy marriage, it's not the location's fault. It's not the economy's fault. It's not all of the outside variables' fault. In fact, it's nobody's fault. We're not placing blame here, but we're looking at whose accountability is it to change? Whose accountability is it to seek the resources and find the solutions that are going to change your situation?
I love it. I think that's so important. And I think, you know, especially, so we're going to get into this, when you have a new baby, you've got this new factor. So maybe you and your spouse got along really, really well when it was just the two of you. It was really easy to be able to go out to dinner whenever you wanted and go on vacation whenever you wanted. And now you have this huge responsibility. And it can be so easy to say, well, the reason why we're not getting along anymore is because in this dynamic, things just don't work. Or in this dynamic, I don't get enough sleep. And there's a ton of merit to the fact that not getting enough sleep can affect the way somebody functions in a marriage. But if we look at it differently, so I had Rabbi David Lyon came on the show maybe like 2 years ago to talk about Wisdom for Strong Marriage. That's the episode title. And he said, you know, you can view these things, these challenges in relationships as things that defeat you, or you can view them as hurdles that once you get over them, it's sort of like a progressive, you know, it's like a progressive up and down that once you get to the other side, you're stronger and happier. And it's an invitation for you to grow together and love each other even more. When my husband and I were on our honeymoon, he always tells this story to anyone who's afraid of having a child, even if they really want one. They're so afraid of what that child could mean for their marriage and their relationship. He tells the story about how we were on the plane and I was sleeping, I guess. And he got up to go to the bathroom or something. And this guy asked him, you know, where are you guys headed? And he said, we're on our honeymoon. And the guy said, oh, congratulations. And I guess my husband noticed that this man had children with him and they started talking about kids. And my husband said, you know, I really want children, but I'm so worried about children, you know, hindering the connection that I have with my wife. And he said, don't worry about that. Like when you see your wife as a mother, your connection with her is only going to grow. And you guys are only going to grow more and more in love with each other. And I think you can choose to view it that way, or you can choose to view it the way that my husband kind of viewed it initially before he got into this conversation, because there are so many messages in this society that, like, I hate to say that, but this is true, that like kids ruin everything and they just make it harder and they kill the romance. And but the other side of it, which I believe is the truth, is that they can actually deepen your connection with each other and make you love each other even more. Like, I look back at those two kids and those honeymoon photos and I'm like, oh, they didn't even know what was like, they didn't even know how good it could be, you know? And so the biggest reason why I wanted to have you on the show here today is to talk about what the newborn phase means for so many people in relationships. You just had your second baby and you've recently been there with all the sleepless nights and everything that comes with that. What, if anything, do you feel like you have to share with people going through a similar time with their spouse, maybe feeling totally worn down and unsure of what the future holds?
Well, I love what you said about the choice. You can choose to view having children as something that's just going to be horrible and ruin your life, or you can choose to view it through a lens of something that's going to enrich your life. And that concept aligns with a principle that my husband and I teach all of our clients from the get-go, which helps them generate the outcomes that they want. And this principle is to initially create what you want in advance of achieving it. So you initially imagine, you initially dream, you initially vision. What do I want that to look like? What do I want that phase to look like? And, you know, we all know this is a phase, but this is about in advance really asking yourself, what do I want this to look like? Right?
Did you ask yourself that before you had your recent son?
100%. And before I had our first three-year-old. So this literally means coming together with your partner in the third trimester of pregnancy at the latest and really thinking about all aspects of your life that are going to be impacted by the arrival of this baby. What are each of your expectations for the areas of your life that are going to be impacted postpartum? What is each of you scared of? And what would you ideally like to see during this phase? And if you're a single parent, you can do this exercise with yourself and just rope in close family members who are going to be supporting you as well. But asking yourself these questions and essentially laying the foundation for what is going to come gives you the opportunity to not only intentionally create what this phase is going to look like, but it gives each of you an opportunity to vulnerably share your own fears. And when you vulnerably share your own fears, you can navigate through them together as a couple and allow your partner the opportunity to support you through these fears.
So let me walk you through a really common scenario and ask you for your advice. Okay, so let's say we have the couple who hasn't done this because they're waiting for their baby to come. And when their baby comes, they're going to be even more in love with each other. And it's going to be so easy and blissful and wonderful that they're not even going to need sleep. And then the baby arrives and guess what? They're exhausted and maybe their baby is a little bit on the fussier end of the spectrum and it doesn't look like what they thought it was going to look like. And the wife, I think it's typically the wife, so I'm just going to map that out, is disappointed that their husband, and maybe we're in a same-sex relationship here, so any type of dynamic, but we've got one spouse who is really disappointed in the amount of participation by the other spouse, and it affects the happiness level and the joyfulness level in the marriage, and maybe things were okay before. Maybe they just didn't think that was going to be an issue. I actually talked about this with you before we recorded this podcast a few weeks ago, that when my first child was born, I was 27 years old. My husband was 31. He was running for political office at the time. He had like this 24-hour-a-day commitment, basically. And I was like super wife about it. I was so supportive and so excited for him. It was like his campaign was my baby while I was pregnant. And everyone would ask us, you know, what are you going to do? He had two more months of campaigning after the baby came, after my first baby came. What are you going to do when the baby comes? Like, I'm going to be just as committed to this. Like, I was totally naive and didn't understand what this baby coming into my life was really going to mean and into our lives. And my husband has, if you look back at his like yearbooks from lower school and middle school, they're all like, I can't wait to be a dad. What do you want to be when you grow up? Dad. How many kids do you want to have? Four. I mean, all of his ambitions are about fatherhood. So I'm like, well, he's going to be like super committed and this is going to be great. And I'm going to be like the biggest campaign political wife ever. And none of this is going to get in the way. And then guess what? My baby's born. I have postpartum anxiety. I have postpartum depression. My husband, as I, you know, our conversation was basically, I understand that you need to run for office and that's okay with me because I'm going to support you and I'm just going to do it all myself. And a lot of people don't even have that conversation. They just kind of make this assumption that their partner's going to be there full on. And anyway, I ended up being disappointed, even though we'd kind of had this conversation that, you know, he wasn't going to be as available. And I found motherhood to be extremely triggering. We could have an entire other podcast episode about this, but it brought up so much for me from my own painful elements of my childhood. And I was a mess. And the whole thing just really disappointed me. And I didn't know what my future with my husband, as far as our parenting, was going to look like. Like, was he going to be a super involved dad? You know, after this stage was over, was I always going to feel totally drained by this experience? And what I told you in this conversation was what ended up happening was we had more children. Our children grew up and now he is, I mean, and he was then, it was just a different time in our life, super dad. I mean, he takes them on the most incredible adventures. And what we've learned is what the two of us are good at. And like, I would rather do literally probably anything than like go on a hike in the middle of winter with my kids and freeze and whatever. And like that, he's all about that. And I want to be inside and maybe do indoor activities. I could go on and on about this, but we both have our strengths and we both have things we love and we're teammates. We've figured out, I mean, we've had children now for 6.5 years, but we've found this way to make it work. And it's never 50-50. And I loved that you said this. You've said this on your website. You've talked to me about it. It's never 50-50. So let's go back. My question here was, what do you say to the person who gets into this, who's married to someone, they're happy, they have a baby, and it feels like everything just blows up? They're unhappy. They don't like the division of labor. Where do they start?
Well, we're in triage land now. We're not in let's prepare and design this next phase beautifully, which I always advocate for. But oftentimes naivete trumps our intuition to create and design the future. And here we are. We're in need of a triage. So it really depends on the scenarios. I mean, there's one scenario where the mother is dealing with a postpartum mood disorder, which with my first, I also dealt with postpartum anxiety and postpartum depression. The tricky thing about that is that when there is a chemical imbalance, oftentimes when there are chemical imbalances, the individual with the chemical imbalance, this time the mother, doesn't recognize that there's a real chemical imbalance. And she just pushes forward and she just pushes forward, right? In that case, ideally, there's somebody in her life, hopefully her partner, who can recognize that there's a chemical imbalance and help pull her out. And then from that position, and what I mean by pull her out is, hey, get a therapist. Hey, get some medication. Hey, what do we need to do to make this better? Once she's pulled out of those deep waters, then designing can happen, right? Creating a future together can happen. But let's imagine, like in the scenario of your question, can we imagine that we're maybe like 4 or 5 months postpartum? People are sleeping a little bit more. People, you know, homeostasis is beginning to show that it's possible.
Yes, things are getting a little less normal. We're not going to be in this time warp forever. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the time warp triage period is a whole different answer. But I think the answer that you're looking for is then what happens, you know, when we're 5-6 months postpartum and everybody's just at their wit's end and tired, and how do you function as a family?
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
So this concept is not a very romantic concept, but if you think about your relationship like a business or an organization, you can start to develop your relationship to be a finely tuned machine like yours, Laura. Like, I love the example of he's great at outdoor stuff. I'm great at indoor stuff. We both know our place. We both thrive there. So if you think of a company, it has different departments, marketing, sales, HR, and each department is populated by those people who hopefully really love what they're doing and they're really excellent at it. And at times in the company, it may look like the salespeople are working really hard and they're working way harder than the HR people because the salespeople are out and about flying here and there. They're out in the field. They're traveling away from their family. They're pounding the pavement. But then sometimes it may look like the HR department is working harder than everybody else because maybe there's a problematic employee or a dynamic in the organization. But what makes the organization thrive is that everybody is in their ideal place where they want to be doing a good job that they care about. So think about this analogy that we just talked about and then apply it to your relationships. And in a relationship, there are actual departments that exist. There's romance, there's sex, grocery shopping, helping the kids with homework, cooking, cleaning, paying the taxes, making new friends, buying birthday presents, planning vacations, managing the household budget. These are all departments. And Zach and I use the term that we call areas of accountability. So we think, okay, who's accountable for this area? Who's going to be accountable for buying the birthday presents? Who's going to be accountable for taking the kids on snowy hikes? Who's going to be accountable for investing? And the unpopular reality, like you said earlier, Laura, is that this is never a 50-50 arrangement. It's not I do half, you do half. The best way to make your organization or your home, in this case, run smoothly is to identify the person who is either best at managing it or who's going to complain more if it's not managed the quote-unquote right way.
We're going on a trip for spring break. We have a trip coming up, and I'll tell you, I have no idea like when our flights leave. I don't know where we're staying. I have no idea like what time anything's taking place, how long we're going to be there, when we're coming home. And Ben has absolutely, if I asked Ben what the name of our electric company was, I don't know if he would be able to answer that question. The amounts that we pay to each different various utility company that we pay each month. I just basically take that on because that's sort of something I can, I've been doing my whole life. Like I wrap my head around it, and planning travel sounds like an absolute nightmare to me. And it is the thing he is so in love with. So I think like also what is it that brings you joy, right? Ben loves to plan travel and plan activities and we all love it and it's wonderful. And he loves doing it. Right? It's like a super fun thing. I love certain elements of parenting that bring me a lot of joy and probably bring him a little bit less joy. And I can do those things while he's in the office working really late. It doesn't look like 50-50, like, okay, you gave her the bottle last night, so I'm going to give her the bottle tonight. Like, we tried that when our first was born. And let me just tell you something, it was a miserable nightmare. And I watch other people doing that because it's like their first go round. And I'm like, just stop now. Like, if, like, just give up and like let it go and understand that like that's not really how it goes, A, and B, don't compare yourself to how your neighbors are doing it because maybe that does work for them. I don't know. Maybe they trade off. I heard a lot of stories about that and I was like, should we be doing that? Are we doing the wrong thing? And eventually after like all this time, it's like we just kind of figured out what works for us. And we're always like, we're still figuring. It's an ongoing journey. But I think there's a lot to be said about not comparing yourself to like the marriage next door. Do you know what I mean?
Of course. Comparison is the thief of joy. It's the thief. It robs you of joy because what you're doing is comparing yourself to something that you don't even understand all of the variables that are at play over there next door.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's easy to compare yourself to something where you only have 10% of the facts of what's going on. Even as women, we can compare ourselves to other women's bodies. And the appearance of a woman's body is 10% of what her experience maintaining that body is. So do we really want to compare ourselves and say, I want to be just like that? Or why? What's wrong with me that I'm not just like that? When we really don't know everything that goes into it, right? And the same analogy applies for parenting. It's a lonely, sad, and judgmental road to go down comparing yourself to parents. And I think we could have a whole nother podcast on that.
We could. You know what I noticed about comparing myself, like our coupleship, like to other people's, I think in the beginning was I didn't really have like a roadmap for what I wanted, like for parenting. I mean, I knew I wanted to do it differently than it was done with me, but I didn't. And my husband was kind of in the same boat. I had models, right? But what happens with that is like you have these models, which is a really good thing. We both grew up with models of what we wanted our families to look like. But I didn't get to see how the insides were operating. So I ended up kind of comparing my insides to their outsides. So there's this benefit to having this relationship or this family that you look up to or several. but then also not really knowing how to necessarily make that work. And I noticed that when I was comparing myself the most to other women, to other people, that was automatically when I was comparing my husband the most. So the meaner I was to myself, the meaner I was to him. And like, what would happen, I asked myself, if I just gave myself compassion, if I just accepted myself, could I give the same thing to him and like really just really embrace both of us more? And that has been hugely helpful for me, because I, like everybody else, I mean, especially with Instagram and everything we have in our faces all the time, have struggled with comparison. Speaking of bodies, though, let's go back to that. I think of the newborn stage as being a lot of wonderful things, but I, along with plenty of other women, do not necessarily associate it with the word sexy. I think a lot of people, I've actually gotten a lot of messages from people about this. Like, I know sex is really important in a marriage, but like, A, I mean, I can't even have sex right now because that's what this person would be saying. Like, I've just had a baby, so I need 6 weeks anyway. Or like, I don't know how many weeks you're supposed to wait anymore. It kind of depends on how you have the baby. But once you are given permission, you know, to proceed, if you will, first of all, some people don't feel ready for that. I know I didn't when I had, like, I had a VBAC delivery with my second. I had another one with my third, but I'd already delivered a baby that way. But my first one, I was in a lot of pain. It felt terrifying to re-engage in that way. And I know there have been a lot of really funny reels made about like getting the go-ahead from the doctor and just being absolutely terrified. We're spit up on, we're sleepy. It's not a particularly sexy process, but then we also know that having sex is important. I believe you believe that, having read a lot of your blog posts preparing for this interview. So how do we make it sexy? Can we make it sexy? Do we let go of the fact that it's not sexy? Do we make a time when we're going to re-engage with each other and just kind of commit to it? What do we do here?
Well, first, let's just establish why sex is important. So sex is important because in a monogamous relationship, it's the one thing that differentiates your relationship with your partner between your relationship with anyone else in the world. It's the one thing. Sex is important because you only do it with your partner. Again, if you're in a monogamous relationship, right? So because of that, it's the one restaurant that's open in town. It's the one place to get that both of you are depending on to get your appetite filled. Right now, postpartum mothers typically don't have much of an appetite.
Yeah. No. I'm like, what if there's no appetite?
So think about it this way. Sex doesn't mean intercourse. We first have to start to relate to sex and sexual connection, not only as intercourse. And it's tricky to do that because, you know, we go to our 6 week postpartum appointment and all of a sudden the doctor says, okay, you're cleared for sex. And then you leave and you're like, okay, A, I'm not. I will tell you, I'm absolutely not. Like,
you're wrong.
And
that's not true.
You're wrong. Yeah. I'm not. Mm-hmm. So reframing the context of sex into not intercourse, but sexual connection. Sexual connection is an intimate physical connection. So one of the cutest early examples that I have from our own relationship with our firstborn is when I was like tremendously sleep deprived. I was in shock from having our first baby. Luckily, Zach and I understood the concept behind the importance of maintaining a sexual connection. So what we would do is we'd do these things called spider humps. And one of us would be laying in bed and one of us would just come and drape our body over the other person, extend all of our arms and our legs and just wrap them around the other person. And the other person would do the same. So we'd be like two little spiders latched together at the tummies. And we would just breathe for like 30 seconds until the baby cried, until somebody needed something. But it really only had to take 30 seconds to just have a moment of intimate connection. And it's totally doable when you're wearing an adult diaper, when you're not having time for anything. And it's that connection that sustains you to the next day. And then maybe the next day or the next week or the next month, you do intimate massage. And then maybe the next month or the next day, you start giving blowjobs. And then maybe the next day and the next month, like, you know what I mean? Like, we go in incremental baby steps. We're not just going straight towards intercourse. We're going towards the goal here is to maintain a physically intimate connection with the partner.
This podcast was brought to you by my very own company, Maxwell Media. Maxwell Media provides its clients with gorgeous, custom, streamlined web design optimized for all screen sizes and budgets. There is truly no better feeling than meeting a potential client, giving them your card, and knowing that when they find you online, they're going to be blown away by you. Having a Maxwell Media website is like getting to put your best foot forward 24/7, no matter where you are and who you're meeting. I work with you to come up with a custom logo, color palette, straightforward design, and content creation to make your message clear and attractive to anyone who finds you online. You can learn more about my web design services, social media marketing, brand, life coaching, and more at my website, maxwellaspen.com. Again, that's maxwellaspen.com, and feel free to reach out to me directly anytime at laura@maxwellaspen.com. So I think in this stage, what I'm trying to address is that there can be a lack of desire because of the overwhelming nature of having a new child or children, just having a lot of children.
Yeah.
Are you kind of saying like, hey, I hear you, but the only thing that really differentiates your relationship from a friendship is having sex regularly. And like, I get you, but like, do it anyway. And like, maybe the feelings will come afterward. Is that kind of what you're saying to a degree?
In some cases, yes.
Okay.
Like in some cases, absolutely yes. In other cases where there are other variables, like a postpartum mood disorder, maybe a really difficult recovery, no. So this is where earlier in the podcast, I was talking about the importance of intentionally creating what you want the fourth trimester to look like, intentionally designing it. This is where if you have if you're able to do this in advance and talk about what is our sex life going to look like in the fourth trimester, I would ask my husband, what is your sexual appetite? What is my sexual appetite? How often do we want to have sex? What are our expectations around sex? What are our fears around sex? If we have that conversation in advance, then what you can do is prepare for the phase and manage everybody's mentality around that phase. It's sort of like if you get ready for a 1-hour car ride and you're like, okay, everybody, we are not stopping to go to the bathroom. We are not stopping to buy food. We are going to get to our destination in 1 hour. So what does everybody have to do in advance now to take care of themselves, but also manage their expectations during the car ride? And what my husband and I did this time around is, given that this was our second rodeo and we knew more what to expect, we said, I know I am not going to be ready for intercourse until at least 6 weeks. And then I'm going to go to the 6-week checkup and I'm going to see how I feel. And I need you, Zach, to not have any expectations. I know that's hard, but I need you to not have any expectations for intercourse, because I'm going to come home from that appointment. And I also was working with a pelvic floor therapist. I need to get the sign off on my pelvic floor therapist to make sure that this is not going to be painful. I came home from my 6-week. And my pelvic floor therapist and my doctor were like, you're still a little jacked up in there, Sally. Like, there's still a little bit of work together. And if you're feeling pain with intercourse, this is not the time. So my husband had his expectations that there was going to be a 6-week marker, an 8-week marker, a 10-week marker, where we were going to check in about the progress of my recovery so that his expectations were met. That we weren't going to be stopping at McDonald's for a snack, that we weren't going to be stopping to go pee, that we weren't going to, you know, metaphorically speaking. So managing each other's expectations and setting a real timeline of when you're going to check in about things is also a really important strategy to employ before the fourth trimester rolls around.
I love a lot of what I'm hearing from you is like this really romantic and wonderful consideration for your husband's needs in a time where most of the time, like, people tend to be not really thinking about that because there's this huge thing that has just happened for the woman. And I know this can be controversial, but I think it's really important. I think, you know, I watched this happen and I've experienced this myself when my first child was born. There can be this real, like, sort of martyrdom and resentment that occurs for women when they have a child, because a lot of the responsibility will fall on them and maybe a lot more than they were expecting. And sometimes this is very real. Like sometimes the dynamic, things are really out of balance and the woman is really doing way more than her share. But a lot of other times, what I've observed is that the woman is like extremely vulnerable because she is doing so much and she's basically like offering her entire heart and soul in a way that probably she hasn't before to her family. And like a baby is like existing from her milk. And like you've got like, it's just a very vulnerable thing. It's like the most vulnerable you've ever been in probably your marriage up until that point or your relationship up until that point. And this resentment will develop, but you've got the husband who's like actually very much pulling his weight, just not in the same ways. And those things end up getting kind of written off because the woman is faced with such a tremendous challenge that I think can be difficult sometimes for men to understand. So they've had this partner that has been like on their side forever and just understood them. And now it's like, wait, I'm experiencing something that maybe you don't understand fully. And I'm working hard in these ways that I don't know if you can see or if you understand how hard I'm working. And while that might very much be true, like it might very much be true that like your husband doesn't understand how hard you're working, it doesn't necessarily mean that he's not a human being still having a human experience. And I think the idea, this sort of like modern idea that we sort of make fun of him for that or completely discount his contributions or make him feel badly. Do you know what I'm talking about, Sally? Like, do you know like the sort of cultural phenomenon I'm trying to reference right now?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like it's like a meme culture thing about like men just being completely useless. I wouldn't particularly like that if I were a man. And I've seen that just like I've seen like women complain about that. And then like their husband is literally out working. So this is a very traditional dynamic I'm describing. It's not the only thing that can exist. But let's just say I've seen this a lot. The husband is literally out, like basically making it possible for maternity leave to happen, paying for the entire house, everything that's inside the house, everything that the child needs. And that is so worth something. You know, like obviously we're not regularly dealing with a dynamic where a husband is making all the money and the woman is at home with the kids, right? But often, like the slack that's picked up in that phase is being picked up by the man to make it possible for the woman to like work as hard as she's working. I mean, everyone's just working so hard. This happens all the time. But like we're kind of taught to like discount those contributions and be like, well, I don't care what you need right now because look what I've just been through. And I find that to be just like so destructive. And I've been there, y'all. Like I have so been there and I watch other people doing it. And I want to just be like, don't do that.
Yeah. And I've had those feelings too, because like you say, when we have a baby, it's there. I still haven't found the words to just describe how like world expanding and world shattering it is at the same time. Right.
Yes.
So one of the benefits of living in the era that we live in right now is after women's lib, women are actually talking about how freaking hard it is to have a baby. And we're
it's
like,
so hard.
Everybody,
yeah.
It's so hard. You have no idea. But then the unfortunate negative flip side of that is that we can then build up resentment. And if we don't have the right tools to communicate what our needs are, that resentment then becomes mean. It becomes mean towards our partner. It becomes mean towards the person who's doing their best to support us. So a framework that I think is really helpful to remember in these moments is that if you imagine you're sitting at a table with your partner and you're sitting on opposite ends of the table and you're just looking at each other like, you're the problem. No, you're the problem. No, you're the problem. No, you're the problem. What's happening is that you're taking down your partner. You're taking down the partner in the three-legged race. Your legs are tied together and you are actively taking them down. Is that going to benefit you? Is that going to be kind to the person that you love? Absolutely not. So instead, imagine that you're sitting at the same table, but you're sitting on the same side of the table and you're looking at the problem that you're trying to solve together. You're sitting on the same side of the table and you're looking at the problem that you're trying to solve, which is, okay, how do we recalibrate our minds, bodies, and souls to this new chapter of our life? What needs to change? What needs to adjust? What emotional needs need to be met? Who needs to be acknowledged? So therefore, you're sitting together as a team and you're looking at the problem versus looking at each other across the table as if you're the problem. And when you use that framework, it becomes the problem becomes so much easier to solve.
As opposed to the other person being the problem, like there is a problem and how do we work together to fix it? And I know that this can be like really challenging, what I'm about to say. You know, I get that, and it's definitely been really challenging for me. But one of the things I like to think about when I'm like desperate for acknowledgement, because that does happen to me a lot. I think I probably did not get the, I know that I didn't get the acknowledgement that I wanted around things as a child. And so I think I fear that I'm not going to get acknowledged. And if you don't see that I'm doing something, if you don't see that I'm working really hard to contribute, then like, you're going to miss my contributions and you're going to like not love me, or you're not going to like appreciate me, and then I'm going to get abandoned. So that like, that's my story. That's like the thing that I kind of replay a lot. I'm like, look at what I'm doing. Look at what I'm doing. And the reason why I'm saying that is because I want to make sure you see it. And I'm very, very aware of that. It's something that I work on every day. But I think what I try to ask myself now is, okay, Laura, how much do you want to be acknowledged? Like, how much do you really want somebody to notice how much you're doing? Okay. Can you try to imagine that everybody in this family might feel that way? And can you give that away, even though it doesn't feel like you have it, and see what happens? And like, oftentimes I'll just try to think, okay, what am I really grateful for my husband for doing today? And I will try to tell him that. Hey, I really appreciate the fact that you stayed at work like so late tonight and worked so hard on this case, because like, you're supporting us, and thank you. And he will just light up. Like, it will make him so happy. And because he's so happy, he is able to like really give the same thing back to me that I really, really need. And I think oftentimes like we forget that the other person might feel the same way that we do. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. We forget that there's a human on the other end of our partner, because it's so easy to be so deep in it and so stuck in it that we forget that the other person's a human too.
Yes.
And I love that you give away, and then you actually receive more. That's a really beautiful moment in your relationship. Thank you for sharing that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. You said something recently that I totally agree with, and I think about this a lot. And I want to share it with everyone. You said that you really believe that the best thing we can do for our children is to have a really strong marriage at the top. It's kind of like a forgotten idea in a lot of ways, and like millennial society, because look at all of the ads that we read. Look at all the things that are marketed towards us. They're not about building a stronger marriage. They're about having a great wedding. And then once that's happened, giving everything you have to your child. It's not marketed to us that one of the best things, or the best thing we could give our child, is to have a great relationship with our spouse. So we get so worked up and obsessed with being a great parent, and we end up kind of like maybe disagreeing with our spouse about what that looks like, and having those arguments in front of our children, and totally missing the mark, because it's like, actually, you guys getting along and modeling that and like being really safe and being a place that your kids can rely on, that's like the most important thing you can do for them. So how do we prioritize that with everything that feels like it can get in the way, with all the soccer practices, with all the meals we have to make, with all the things that we have to do? How do we prioritize being strong together?
I love that. Well, the concept is I just want to reiterate the concept that you're laying out, is that our children are raised inside of the ecosystem of our relationship, right? So on a physical, emotional, and energetic level, how we love each other is imprinted onto the subconscious minds of our children. And our children can only thrive as much as our relationship is thriving as well. So it's not just about, you know, how much do we love our children, but it's about how do we love each other? And that teaches our children what love is and what love is not.
Mm.
Right? So it's no joke. It's like you said, how do we prioritize that when we have soccer practice, when we have a million things, and it actually feels like there's not a moment in the day to go to the bathroom alone, let alone prioritize our relationship? What are you talking about? So I've come up with some hacks over the years that I've, you know, have tested on my own relationship, that I've tested on my clients, and they work beautifully. And I'll share some of them with you. The first hack is, if you think it three times, you got to talk about it, right? So If you think something three times, if you think, I can't believe he didn't put his coffee cup in the dishwasher, he put it in the sink. oh my God, I can't believe he put his coffee cup in the sink. He didn't put it in the dishwasher like the family policy. Oh, he did it again. He put the coffee cup in the freaking sink. If you think it three times, you have to talk about it, even if it's something as benign as a coffee cup. Because what happens is if you don't talk about it, you don't get resolved about it. And then if you don't get resolved about it, you start to collect more evidence as to why your partner is a lazy slob around the house. And then the more evidence you start to collect, you then start to relate to your partner like they're a lazy slob around the house. And then years of doing this, even months of doing this, creates a major rift in the way that the two of you relate. Then you start to relate to your partner like they're a nincompoop. Then you start to mutter under your breath because you're not actually communicating like what you need. Then you start to make little snide remarks. And guess what? Your kids see all of this.
They do. Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So the if you think it three times, you got to communicate it rule is one that just maintains health in a relationship. And it doesn't take any extra time. It doesn't take any extra date night. It doesn't take babysitters. It's literally, if you think it three times. My husband said this to me the other day. He said, you know what? I have to talk to you because I've had this thought three times. I've had the experience that you busted in my office because we both work from home. I've had the experience that you have busted in my office, disregarding the fact that I'm in my workflow. And you've just come in and asked me, hey, can you hold the baby? Hey, can you, like, I have to go pick up our kid from preschool. And I'm sure you're not trying to be disruptive, but the way that it feels to me is really disrespectful and disruptive. What that does is it gives him the opportunity to communicate his annoyance with me, quite frankly. And it gives me the opportunity to say, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I had no idea that my actions were having that impact on you. Like in that moment, I actually needed you to hold the baby because there was an emergency with our three-year-old. She was like covered in, I don't know, something. And I needed to run and grab her. But I'm so sorry that I didn't understand that you were in the flow. Thank you for bringing it to my attention. And now I don't do it. So you're nipping negative dynamics in the bud, essentially, by doing this think it three times rule. One of my favorites.
It's awesome. And I love that you didn't respond because I've certainly done this before. I love that you didn't respond with like, oh my God, do you know how hard this is? Like, I'm just trying and like kind of make it so like he doesn't have like a space. Like, I love that you paused. You could have had that thought and you could have said, I'm having a hard time hearing this right now because it feels like you don't understand how difficult this job is. There are respectful ways to communicate that. But I love that you paused and kind of like acknowledged him and responded in the way that you did. And I love the way that he presented it to you. I think that's really wonderful. Do you have any other hacks you want to share with us before we unfortunately have to say goodbye? I could talk to you all day.
Oh my gosh, I totally do. So let's see. Another hack, which we've talked about, is the importance of sex, right? And sexual intimacy is another hack that just you have to have in your relationship in order to keep it different from your friendships. So we've talked about it earlier in the podcast. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but it's really, even if it's just doing a spider hug, even if it's just making out for 10 seconds, maintaining that connection that is unique to you and your partner is super important. And the way that you do it is you each talk about what are your sexual appetites, what do each of you need, and then you create a negotiation together. Okay, what does that look like in terms of what we're going to commit to as a partnership? Okay, it looks like you want sex three times a week. I want sex one time a week. Okay, let's meet in the middle. Let's have sex twice a week and let's maintain that for the sake of our connection. Sometimes we may not feel like doing it. Like sometimes you don't feel like going to the gym, but you go. Sometimes we really feel hot and heavy about doing it. But it's that regularity that maintains your intimate connection that then pours over in how you treat each other in front of your kids.
Absolutely. I love that. I think that's fantastic advice.
That's the quickie. No pun intended.
No pun intended.
And then I'll share with you one more hack if you'd like. We've all heard this before, but it's date night. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's date night translates to just alone time with you and your partner. And when you're postpartum, date night could look like 5 minutes of the two of you in your room while the baby's sleeping. That's it. That counts as a date night. 2 weeks postpartum, 4 weeks postpartum, right? But the importance of date night is to get the two of you connected and remind you of the sanctity of your partnership and your union. And you two are the co-leaders. You're the co-founders of this little village, right? In addition to date night, though, and here's the second part of the hack that I really love, is solo date night. So yes, you have time with your partner. You have a committed weekly connection with your partner. And again, I won't spend too much time talking about that because we all know the concept, but you have to relate to it as non-negotiable. It just got to happen.
Mm-hmm.
The adjoining hack, the sister hack, if you will, is solo date night. This is a time where each of you gets a non-negotiable time at least once a week to have your own time together. And not together, your own time with yourself. This is your time. For example, Tuesday nights used to be my date night with myself, where everybody would know in the house from 7 to 9, mommy is doing her thing by herself. And what I used to do is just like get on YouTube and surf YouTube and learn about, like, you know, ice skating ballerinas in China. Just random stuff. Because that would fill my cup, right? Now, this doesn't a workout. Your daily workout does not count as your date night. All of the self-maintenance things, going to the grocery store, taking a shower, those don't count as your solo date night. What I'm pointing here is the importance of filling your own cup and having the family organization operate around the importance of each person filling their own cup. Because when somebody's cup is full, they are less likely to act out with resentment, anger, aggression. They have that time to be introspective, and they have that time to then come to the table, family dinner table, if you want, but they have that time to come to the family fully nourished.
I love that you brought this up, because I think what can happen, especially with the date night advice, which I love the date night advice, but I'm now a mother of three. And even when I was a mother of two, this was something that was happening. I've got the kids here. I have my husband and I have my job. And I'm making sure that I have time for all of them. And I'm very adamant about scheduling date night. And I spend like ample amount of time with my children each day, or I try to. And I'm trying to like build my own career, but I don't spend, I haven't scheduled time to spend with myself. And I found it's really funny, like people who have one kid, I always find are the ones that like send the messages, like, I don't understand how the hell you're doing this with three. It actually, for me, like in my experience, like it only gets easier, because it's not like you have three times the difficulty of having one kid. You're learning every single time. So it's getting easier. It's more difficult in like the physical labor aspect and like the emotional labor of like making sure like there's just so much more to do. But the ease of just understanding elements of it gets more and more each time. So like I'm becoming more and more of an expert at this, because Malcolm Gladwell said, you put 10,000 hours in, you become an expert. So like, how many freaking thousands of hours have I put into this already? I don't know, but it's more and more with each kid. So like the whole thing, like I just noticed, like now that I have three kids, I just let go of the small stuff so much more, like so much more than I did when I had two even. And I thought I let go of it then. And like, you just like, don't worry about the shit that doesn't matter anymore. And anyway, one of the things that has gotten easier, which is shocking because like we have three kids now, is I actually have like more of those nights to myself than I ever had before, because I realized like the importance of them. And I will just go to my husband and I will be like, okay, you know what? I don't have a scheduled night, but I will approach him and say, I just realized like I need a minute. I need several hours. I will go see a movie. I will do what you just described, which is get in my bed and like watch YouTube. But it's just this time for me. And that time, we forget how important that is. Yes, date nights are important, but we also have to make sure we have time for ourselves so we can fill our tank and give all the things we have to give to everybody around us.
100%. And the reason I advocate for scheduling it is because if you don't put it in your calendar, it's not going to happen.
Yes. Amen. So important. Yes. I will tell my husband like in advance, like on Tuesday, I want to go do this. Like I won't. It's kind of like different each week, but I will plan it and I will make sure it happens. And I so appreciate your wisdom and for just having you on the show, Sally. Thank you so much for coming on Look Ma, No Hands.
It's an absolute pleasure, Laura. Thank you for having me.
And I want to say, Sally is a major reason why you are all listening to this season 2 right now, because I, as you know, had my podcast for about 80 something episodes and took quite a break and returned. I'm so, so happy to be back. But a huge part of what motivated me to come back was some friends of mine here listening to my podcast and telling me that they loved it and they wanted to hear more. And Sally was really at the front lines of those of that group of individuals. So thank you, Sally, for encouraging me. I really, really appreciate it because I'm so happy to be doing this again.
Oh, that feels so good to hear. And thank you for what you're putting out into the world, because it's just a complete joy to listen to.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Sally. Thank you guys so much for listening. I'm your host, Laura Max-Rose. You've been listening to Look Ma, No Hands, and I want to offer you a few things from Sally at Maxwell Coaching today. She has one-on-one coaching offerings and also couples coaching on her website, wellcoaching.com here in Aspen. And Sally, you also mentioned you have a newsletter that anyone listening can sign up to. You can get free tips and advice from Sally. More of where that came from on the show today. Thank you again for joining us. I look forward to joining you all again next time.